Sarah Menendez is having her wisdom teeth taken out.
What?
And is on Twitter.
Oh, my God.
Bro, the man who pulled my teeth out today straight up was like, all I listen to is NPR. Like, same home, please be nice to my teeth.
What? Really? Are you serious?
He was like, I love that podcast, Make Me Smart. And I was like, dog, those are my people.
Let's do it.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm Molly Wood. Welcome to Make Me Smart, the podcast where we are joined, as always, by you, dear listener, because none of us is as smart as all of us.
Molly's off on Tuesday, so we're not doing news today as we record this thing. It is Friday, but we are talking about something that's in the news a lot. Bitcoins and the blockchain. We're doing it because A, it's in the news, but also B, because all y'all asked for it, too.
So many of you have asked. The basic question, of course, being what?
Yeah, totally.
Is going on. And just as we were preparing to record this, in a fit of fortuitous timing, Forbes did a whole cover story on the bubble, and we'll be talking to that writer, in fact. Yep. I think what we're going to arrive at by the end of this episode is, like, you do, well, maybe you don't need to understand it, but you can make a lot of money if you do.
Got it.
But like all of our favorite topics on Make Me Smart, it all started with questions from you.
Make me smart.
Make me smart.
Hey, make me smart.
Hello, Kai and Molly. This is John Bickle from Southbury, Connecticut calling. Love the show. I'm hoping you can make me smarter about Bitcoin and Ethereum and digital payment systems and cryptocurrency in general. What does Wall Street think about the future of Bitcoin and blockchain technology? Do we think there will be some melding of Apple Pay or Google Pay with a blockchain currency someday? And lastly, is this technology safe? Can hackers infiltrate the Bitcoin network and wipe out a person's balance? Thanks a lot.
All right. So technically, John, that was more than a question, but okay.
Really a lot.
Whatever.
That was a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of questions.
But all of them good ones, right? Because, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And we will try to get to them. We're not avoiding you.
Nope.
But we're just going to get all the questions out of the way to some extent first. When it comes to Bitcoin, a lot of otherwise smart people, including me and this longtime listener, get a little confused.
Whenever I hear the term Bitcoin, I often think of Lethal Weapon 2 and the South African villain who, I know this wasn't what he was looking for, but I think, we want to get the Bitcoins!
Do you know anyone with Bitcoins?
I do not know who has the most Bitcoins. I don't think I do know anybody with Bitcoins. I don't know how you get Bitcoins, who pays in Bitcoins. Like, I know it's not like PayPal doesn't give you Bitcoin change. I don't know how to get some Bitcoins. I don't think I know anybody with Bitcoins, although who knows, maybe they're all around me.
What I love is how the German accent kept coming and going and coming and going.
Comes and goes.
I know. I do know somebody with Bitcoin. There's an engineer here at Marketplace who bought a bunch of Bitcoin when they were like $4 a piece or whatever the hell it is, and he's hung on to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's my go-to on Bitcoin.
I got a story about that one time that I had Bitcoin for a little bit.
Really? Okay, go ahead.
We will talk about some of the bubbly behavior in Bitcoin, but at one point, I bought about $100 worth of Bitcoin a long time ago. When was that, you know?
I can hear you looking it up now.
I don't know, maybe 20, you can hear me typing, like trying to look up when this thing happened.
Yeah.
But so I bought about $100 worth in 2013, maybe.
Wow.
Might have been 2014. And very shortly after I bought it, the trading platform, Mt. Gox, some people call it Mt. Gox.
Yeah, yeah.
It crashed.
Exploded, yeah.
Or something. Like it had this big meltdown. It may or may not have been hacked. I don't really know. $500 million in Bitcoin was wiped out, including
Molly Wood.
Including my $100. I was like, I'm just going to put an amount that I'd be okay with losing. But here it is 2017, and I'm still not okay with losing.
No,
it.
No, clearly.
Because it could have been worth at various points in any given day, given the fluctuation in value, like thousands of dollars.
Totally. All right, so.
Tens, maybe.
Absolutely. Which gets us to a new round of what is turning into our favorite little game.
Time for the game that makes you smart. Five questions about one word. Here they are, Kai Rizdahl and Molly Wood.
Oh my God. So let's give props to Jeff Peters, one of the engineers here at Marketplace, not the guy who owns all the Bitcoin, by the way, for that one. Oh, man, he's a funny guy. So here's the deal. Just like last week, Molly got to ask all the questions about growth because that was not her area of expertise. I get to ask all the questions about Bitcoin because I know nothing other than I should have bought them a long time ago. I spoke with Laura Shin. She is a senior editor at Forbes magazine, as Molly was talking about. And also, she's the host of the Unchained podcast, which is all about cryptocurrencies. And I started, as one does when one is talking about Bitcoin, with this question. What is a Bitcoin?
A Bitcoin is a form of digital cash. It's essentially a cryptographic token. And what makes it special is that previously on the internet, whenever you were sending something to someone, whether it was a photo or an MP3 or a Word document, the sender always retained a copy of it. But with Bitcoin, if I send you a Bitcoin, then everybody in the world can be certain that I no longer have it and that you now have it.
Okay, the way that happens is by something, which is question number two for me, called blockchain. What is blockchain?
A blockchain is a ledger of transactions, and copies are held on computers all around the world. So essentially, it's a ledger of all the transactions going back to the very first transaction in Bitcoin.
Okay. Is Bitcoin the only cryptocurrency out there?
No, definitely not. It's spawned a whole new class of digital assets, and many people are calling those crypto assets, and those are broken out into subcategories. One of them is cryptocurrencies, so that would be a cryptographic asset that can be used as cash, and some of the other ones in that category would be Zcash or Monero, which both have a privacy feature, so it is more truly like digital cash, whereas Bitcoin is always traceable, and then some of the others are called crypto commodities. Like another popular one, Ethereum has what's called Ether, which is used as gasoline to fuel the smart contracts on the Ethereum platform. And then the last would be crypto tokens, which are used to power consumer-facing applications.
Okay, wait, can we back up to Ethereum here for a second? Because now it sure sounds like you're making stuff up.
So Ethereum is a world computer, and it is a platform for running these things called smart contracts. And essentially, if you think of Bitcoin as being very limited in its functionality, more like a calculator, you know, limited to this cash function, then Ethereum enables a lot more flexible programming.
Give me an example in real life of how this works, Ethereum and tokens and all of that.
So there are several different tokens. Many of them are powering what are called decentralized applications. And one of them is called Gollum, and it's creating what's called the Gollum. I think they call it like the worldwide supercomputer or something like that. You can think of it as Airbnb for your computing cycles when you're not using your computer.
Wow.
So if you go to bed at night and your computer is sitting idle, there's probably maybe a data scientist or a CGI artist who could use the compute cycles on your computer. And in fact, there are many computers around the world that could be used for that. And so the Gollum network token enables people on that network to exchange this service, people who need it and people who can offer it, using the token to make that trade. And it all happens automatically. The computers are the ones that are managing this and making the payments. But you would need to purchase the token initially in order to purchase some computing cycles on that network.
So let me get this clear. I'm going to let somebody use my computer overnight while I'm sleeping for whatever purpose I don't really know. And it's going to create something called an Ethereum token?
Oh, so that's part of the Gollum network, but the Gollum token and the Gollum network are running on the Ethereum virtual machine.
Do I get anything out of this? Do they pay me? Will they send me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So if you are the CGI artist that needs to render an animation, then you're getting this work. And, you know, if you were to use only one computer, it might take hours. But if you're using 100 computers all around the world, it could take a minute. And if you have the computer cycles available, then you can earn money for doing so. It's just like Airbnb, but for computing cycles.
you say it like it's a run-of-the-mill thing, and I'm like, okay.
Some of these are more like B2B plays. This probably is an example of that. But a lot of people in the space theorize that this sort of like infrastructure layer is what will be built out first.
Okay, that all makes sense in the hearing of it, but we have done what I really didn't want to do, which is gone way, way down the cryptocurrency rabbit hole. So let me try to back us out by asking this question. Unless I study this stuff professionally for my journalistic career or academic, or unless I am somehow on the very leading edge of investment and asset management, why does this matter to me?
So the reason that it matters to you is because this is going to change our world over the next two decades, as much as the internet has over the last two. And of course, the history hasn't been written, the jury's not out yet, but there's many reasons to believe that this technology, which is very transformative and really represents an advance, is going to bring new things. And it's sort of like asking somebody in 1994, exactly what will the internet bring and why should it matter to somebody who has a telephone and has snail mail?
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, we're already starting to see innovation. You know, how exactly this all plays out is not yet clear, but it is already certain that it's at least the technology at least is making established financial institutions realize that they need to disrupt themselves. And so they are actually also innovating and adopting this technology.
That's actually a great analogy, the whole internet in 1994 thing. That said, spitball it for me. How long will it be until somebody like my mom, who is a 70, what is she, 8-year-old widow who literally does not own an ATM card and is reluctant to put her password online for fear that the Russians are going to get it? How long until she's using Bitcoin like it's no big deal?
Oh, gosh, that's so hard to say. If there's anything I've learned in covering this space, it's that it changes so, so often and so unexpectedly that it's really, really difficult to make predictions. The thing is that what makes it especially hard in this case is that for people that live in developed economies like the U.S., where we have really good functioning financial services, the case of a cryptocurrency in particular is maybe less useful to us. Like there's a lot of uptake of things like Bitcoin in countries like Argentina and Venezuela. And you see it whenever there's kind of like a crisis, like in the run-up to Brexit or post-Brexit, all of those saw all of those locations saw a bump in Bitcoin usage and purchases. But again, like in the United States, it's much more difficult to say.
So here's the thing I don't understand about Bitcoin, and I probably should, given that I do business and economics, but there eventually will be a whole bunch of competing cryptocurrencies, right? I mean, it's not like Bitcoin's the only game out there. So how does that translate into a market-based economy? If I've got Bitcoin and you've got gazinks, how do I buy things from you? And what's the exchange rate mechanism going to be and all of that stuff? I think that's going to be actually an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, it really is. Because what's interesting about this now is that even though we call these cryptocurrencies, and to some extent, they can be used in exchange for goods and services.
Not yet.
What they really are right now at this moment is an asset class.
Yeah. Yeah.
And an investment vehicle. And I think it's like really important to differentiate between, you know, the underlying technology that makes all of this possible is blockchain. Period. Right. This idea of the distributed ledger. And if you back it all the way out to blockchain as like the DNA, the building blocks of all of this stuff, then you start to realize that that technology is what powers all of these other things. And so, you know, you've got all these corporations trying to look into integrating blockchain in some way. There's a, you know, Canadian media production firm that wants to use blockchain, so distributed ledger tracking, to track copyrights for audiovisual content. You have the NASDAQ, the exchange operator, which is actually a private company, trying to patent a system for distributing time-sensitive information via blockchain. Then, of course, you have all these different currencies that are being built on top of that technology. Then you have things like Ethereum, which is using that technology plus the sort of token aspect, but to also build tokens that themselves can execute commands. They are basically software. And so they can do this smart contract thing where they automatically execute. And so all of it builds on top of that. And that's why I think she's saying that it's kind of like the internet, in that we don't know what the different uses are going to be. And right now we have this conversation about cryptocurrency. And it's like, yeah, some interoperate. Some of them, you know, if you use this one, then you could also take this one. Some don't. It's really hard to get your value out in some cases of cryptocurrencies. But I also think there's a real question about whether, you know, when is a government going to issue a cryptocurrency?
Well, right.
There's no reason that can't happen. But then there's all of those other questions about what is this technology going to enable? What I think is so interesting is that we have this weird, because it's now an asset class, you've got this whole like initial coin offering thing starting to pop up where
explain that
anybody.
Right.
Yeah. So anybody, any company or organization can essentially create a token, a limited number of tokens, right, whose usage is traceable via blockchain technology. And they can say, if you want to use my services, you have to use these tokens. So let's just say, for example, that Tesla was going to do it. If you mm-hmm. want to buy a new Tesla, you have to pay in Tesla tokens. Mm-hmm. And we're going to create 100 million Tesla tokens, and we are going to essentially hold an auction, an initial coin offering where anybody can come in and buy these tokens, most likely accredited investors, but let's say it's anybody. The reason that you would buy them is not just that you want to buy a Tesla. It's also that you will think to yourself, oh, dang, everybody's going to want Tesla tokens down the road. And so I'm going to get them at $29, knowing that at some point I'm going to be able to resell them for $100. So what you have now is all these, like, I know a venture capital firm that's going to have an ICO to raise money. People who are building blockchain-based technologies are holding initial coin offerings to raise huge amounts of money outside of banks, outside of venture capital. And they're raising hundreds of millions of dollars. They're essentially creating valuations. This is in Laura's story in Forbes, creating billion-dollar valuations for just like weird startup ideas. But actual people are invested in this.
What could possibly go wrong?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
when you back that all, when you put that into your economist, you know, your economist and finance brain, right? It must be exploding a little bit.
It totally is, because it's like something out of nothing. Let me ask you a more fundamental question that my guess would be at least two other people listening to this podcast have. When people who know what they're talking about, say blockchain, right?
Yeah.
Is there one blockchain and everybody piles on that, or is it like an operating system? You've got MS-DOS, you've got iOS, and there's a bunch of different ones.
I think at its heart, blockchain is a standardized technology. So everybody can implement blockchain, the underlying OS, but there's only one.
Okay.
So it would be like you just use blockchain, and then you create your ledger on top of that. And that goes, you know, but the ledgers are what are different. So Bitcoin's ledger is not the same as Ethereum's ledger.
Gotcha. All right.
But the technology underneath is the same. And so then that technology gets bananas. Like, even if, you know, I don't know, there's just all there. Then there are apps on top of that. And there's like one company's going to do a blockchain incubator with an initial coin offering. Like, it gets kind of bananas. But I guess my big takeaway with this was like, if you can understand this, like, there's all this stuff, and this is something that comes up over and over on our podcast. There's all this stuff we're not paying attention to,
mm-hmm.
like gene editing and petri meat. And, you know, Vox, actually, in the week that we're recording this, had kind of a great piece to this extent. Like, we've been talking about all of these things. Like, these are the big deals. And mm-hmm. frankly, I think that blockchain and cryptocurrency is one of them. And if you can understand it, or you can understand gene editing, or you can understand petri meat, like, that's how you're going to win the future.
Yeah, but here's the deal, right? Just to continue the internet analogy, right? I don't have to understand how the internet works to thrive and run a business and exist on the internet.
Right. That's true.
So
If you did understand how the internet had worked.
If I'd understood it 20 years ago, I'd be a zillionaire right now.
You'd be Mark Cuban.
That's the deal, right.
You know,
exactly.
Like, if you were able to hack yep. one tiny part of understanding it, you'd be Mark Cuban. And there are lots of like blockchain billionaires right now. There are also a ton of people who are going to lose a ton of money in this current like bubble that's happening. So much money is floating around, and there are people who are going to lose a lot of it. I feel lucky that I only lost my $100 back in 2014.
Man, all right. I can hear the dogs. Here's what we're going to do. We are going to move on. We're going to pay some bills and the Make Me Smart question. Here you go.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Did we answer your Bitcoin questions? Because we could have gone on. Well, let me rephrase that. Molly probably could have gone for a long time. For a long time on
I
that
geeked one. Out a lot. I'm sorry,
I would have kept asking questions. Write to us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Hit us on Twitter at Kai Rizdahl. I'm not going to spell it because somebody yelled at me for spelling it. I can't win with y'all. I just can't win. No. It's at Kai Rizdahl and at Molly Wood. I know it's the internet, right?
It just is. And also feel free to tell us all the things we got wrong because we know you're going to do that. Yep. That's to be expected on all topics, and particularly this one. This would normally be the place where we would tell you to check out our weekly editorial meetings on Facebook, but we're not having this one on Monday, this coming Monday, because I will be on vacation, and I'm sorry.
Everybody gets vacation.
Everybody gets vacation. I just read a whole thing about how people who take lots of vacations get higher performance reviews.
What the problem with that is? I have not taken a vacation this summer.
Dude.
And it's performance review time here at Marketplace. So clearly I'm just a hose, man.
Oh my gosh. Just real quick. Schedule one. Real quick.
Kai has been replaced because of insufficient performance.
Kai has been extremely crabby. My theory is, I didn't, of course, read the article because it's Twitter, but I assume it's just because you get so burned out and mad and you don't do a good job anymore.
And it shows up on the radio every single day.
Essentially what's happening with me today. Oh my God. So it's a good... Yep. It's a good thing. The week after that, we will be having it later in the week because I will be in Washington, D.C. for the Public Radio Program Directors Conference.
Oh, my goodness. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. We can't tell you why it's a big deal, but it's a big deal for one Molly Wood.
It's a big deal.
It is.
There will be some big deal stuff.
There will be big
by then.
Dealage
it's very exciting.
Coming.
I have been in, as they say in the tech world, I've been in stealth mode.
Ooh, quiet period. Quiet period. Are you having an initial coin offering? Is that what you're doing? That'd be pretty funny, actually, wouldn't it?
No spoilers. Okay. That would be awesome. Molly tokens. Molly coins? Oh. What would you call your token?
Kai.
Kai coins?
Kai coins? Yeah.
Or just Kai. You know,
just Kai.
That kind of works. Like, you don't even need just an
Kai.
Article.
Kai.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm having an initial coin offering of Kai.
Kai.
That's awesome. That also, you know, gives you 2 weeks to find our Facebook pages and follow them, because when we come back, it's going to be amazing.
That is true. All right. So moving on. I talk to a lot of CEOs in my day job on the radio. Longer versions of them on the podcast that we put out of those things. It's called Corner Office. And I've talked to two people of late of whom I asked our Make Me Smart question. The first one was Maureen Chiquet, the former CEO of Chanel, fine fashion, perfume, all that jazz. Also, Derek Khorashahi. He's the CEO of Expedia, the travel site as well, but also a bunch of other companies. Very different CEOs, very different lines of work. The Make Me Smart question, of course, is what is something you thought you knew but found out you were wrong about? They both actually answered kind of in the same way. Here you go.
Something I thought I knew.
That's a really tough question.
That's a big old hunker of a question.
Gosh, that is good.
Something I thought I knew that it turned out, well, I thought I knew what being a good leader looked like until I found out I was wrong. And it happened when I decided to launch this major leadership initiative in the company, and I went about it in absolutely the wrong way. And I think I had the right idea in terms of the qualities I wanted us to integrate in our culture, but I basically tried to shove it down everyone's throat, and I got thrown out of the room. So
one of my most important lessons when I first came in as CEO was from a young product developer. And I come in and I was making all kinds of decisions and I was working so hard as a CEO. And She came in and said, you know, you're telling us what to do, but you're not telling us where to go. Tell us where to go, and then we'll make the decisions to get us there. It taught me a lesson about leadership. Leadership is about planting a flag and inspiring people about where to go, and then letting them do the work, letting them be the entrepreneurs, and letting them get the rewards of getting there. But it is about planting a flag, and it's about inspiring, not necessarily doing everything for the company. It's been a great lesson for me.
Those are pretty good, actually. I talked to those folks a while ago. I had forgotten those answers. Those are both equally good ones.
Oh, yeah. That reminded me of when we talked to Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Yeah.
In that...
from the Obama White House.
Who thought this was a good idea or something.
Right.
She was, from the Obama White House, but she had a pretty great anecdote in her book about how she was being a controlling nightmare as a leader. And someone said, someone made some comment to her, you're going to do it all yourself. And she took it as a compliment until she realized that it was all falling apart. She's like, oh, wait, they meant you're being kind of a jerk. And
yeah, totally.
Also, take a vacation. Good leadership.
It's tough. I don't get to lead around here. All I do is talk into the microphone.
We love asking interview subjects these questions when I remember I have failed recently a couple of notable times and I'm mad about it. But the good news is sometimes actually the best answers come from you, our listeners. So if you have an answer to the Make Me Smart question, please email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. The best possible outcome is that you actually record it on your phone and email us the recording, and then we play it, and it's a virtuous circle of awesomeness.
And we would play it in the segment that's coming up right now, Letters. Two words, people. Book club. Take our poll. Don't forget to vote. 5 picks. You can find them at our website, makemesmart.org.
I actually went and voted while the Make Me Smart answers were happening. And I'm not going to tell you what I voted for.
How many times did you vote?
Yeah. Well, I was just looking ahead and I was like, oh, I'm going to go vote. Yeah, I think on our website you could possibly vote more than once. Not that I would encourage that kind
of
thing. Also on the website, I wrote a follow-up blog post about my experience with Lyft and my feelings about how growth is negatively affecting service on ride-sharing platforms. I called both of the companies and asked them for comment and also included some of the reactions that we got from listeners. I did not include the fervent and furious Twitter debate between some taxi drivers and, rideshare apologist, but there were some other good tweets and a really great email from a guy who was actually a rideshare driver. It made me feel kind of bad.
Yeah, that actually was a great email. That was, so thoughtful, right?
It was so thoughtful, and it was also just really clever and funny and well written. And it's really long on the blog post, and I would like you guys to know that's only about half of it.
Yeah.
So taking that much time to respond that thoughtfully, thanks, Pat. That was awesome. And here's a couple more letters.
Where do we mail a letter?
In the mailbox.
Okay, this is the greatest name ever.
You stole my line, totally.
I did? I know, I just keep looking at it that's amazing. Susie Zugazaga. Ooh, I want that to be the name of my cryptocurrency, my coin. My token. Sorry, Susie, I'm stealing your name. She writes, I just got around to listening to the Always Tie Your Shoes episode, which was our interview with Captain Dempsey, the Columbia River Bar pilot. I really enjoyed it because I, too, have been to Fort Stevens and the mouth of the Columbia River and could place all of your descriptions. Something I learned on that trip to Fort Stevens, one of the few attacks on the contiguous U.S. during World War II was directed at Fort Stevens by a Japanese submarine near the mouth of the Columbia River in June 1942. There was little damage and no human injuries. Perhaps I nodded off during that lecture in U.S. history class, but I was so surprised to learn that Japanese artillery strikes landed on U.S. soil beyond Pearl Harbor. And she said, in the spirit of us growing smarter together, I thought I would share. And Susie, I know, because I also went to that spot. And that also blew my mind. What?
No, there's no trivia better than historical trivia. I love those.
Yeah.
Also, Jim Southard sent us some thoughts on our favorite topic. Go.
Being a mature boomer in good standing, I have finally decided to draw a line in the sand. What started for me was a shared party line on dial-up wall phones to today when I pay for cell phones each month. From long-distance calls, usually collect to dad and mom, or generally reliable letters sent through the United States mail, to email instantly on my cell phone with appropriate emojis attached. Oh, lest we forget text. I learned I could actually send a comment or text a question to announcers at baseball games, to other broadcasters, or to my family. Well, I've drawn in the line in the sand. No Twitter. I don't want to know what I will miss, because I am certain it is noisy at best. Follow the Twitter, from the president to the megastars to the neighbors down the block. No, I will not follow Twitter. All of which poses an interesting dilemma as the world speeds by. Which one of us will outlast the other, me or the Twitterverse? Just saying.
No, that's totally right. And it's easy to do a little, hey, you kids get off my lawn after that, but he is 1,000% correct.
Yeah, did you see the, there was an interview with Aziz Ansari floating around on Twitter? Well, I mean, Twitter, I saw it on Twitter like four times, ironically. But he was talking about how he took his browser off his phone along with every other sort of form of social media. And he's just like, I don't do it.
Wow.
And then they punked him in the interview and they said, really? You're not on Twitter? You didn't hear about VP Mike Pence? He stepped down today. And Aziz Ansari is like, wait, what? He resigned today? And
oh,
they go,
snap.
If you were on Twitter, you would have known.
You know,
but
man.
He was brilliant. He goes, well, no, he said, I'm not on Twitter. And you would have just told me like you did right now. And I would have found
well,
out.
Well, that's true. That's
and
true.
I was like, ooh, well, good comeback, Aziz Ansari.
It plays to the FOMO in all of us, right? It's that whole fear missing out, baby. Because if I don't see it right away, if I'm somehow like 4 seconds behind everybody else, then I'm the loser. And that's our own human condition.
It's also chemical. Like
yes,
we get a little serotonin boost.
We've had a dopamine boost. We've had that whole addiction conversation where I've decided I like to be buried up to my neck in my phone.
It's a real thing.
Apple Podcasts is where we can be found. Also, by the way, anywhere you get your podcasts, subscribe, tell a friend. Yeah, that's what we need.
That's what we need. So this, yeah, well, I don't know if there's going to be more, but that's it for now. There's going to be more, but that's it for now. Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson, Emily Henderson, and senior producer Nancy Fargali. This week's program was engineered by Jake Gorski. All the music that you heard in this episode was composed by one sound engineer, Bill Lance, who in his 6 years at Marketplace has continually surprised everyone with all the things we did not know that he could do. And that is a trend that we suspect will continue in his future or futuristic endeavors because he's moving on. We're going to miss him. Our theme music, as always, is composed by Ben Holliday and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive producer of Marketplace is Tara Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. And we are out of here. Except I didn't time it right with the music.
Man, we used up almost all the dancing time.
Almost. No dancing.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.